Is this the world you want? So this is a question I have for you this morning. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Josh. I'm the youth pastor here at Life Point Church, and I'm so happy to have the opportunity to be up here this morning speaking before you. But back to my question, is this the world you want? Take a look around you, at your personal life, globally, internationally, all over the place around you. Is this the world you want? How would you answer that question? So here's the thing, I'm not a gloom and doom type of person. I think there's a lot of great stuff happening in our world. I think just even looking at this community that we have here together, I see a lot of awesome things happening here. I feel blessed to be a part of this community and a part of what's happening here at LifePoint. And it's not just at LifePoint. I see a lot of other good things happening all over the world in different communities. People trying to do their best. People trying to help other people. But I think we'd also have to have our heads in the sand to think that our world is perfect. Because the truth is, it's not. While there's a lot of good things happening, there's also a lot of bad. And we've talked about this before, but you can turn on the news and see story after story of divided people, of pain, of hurt, of scandal. I mean, we just already had one again this weekend of another explosion. The truth is, we don't have to look very far to see things that would definitely convince us that although there's some good stuff happening, this world isn't perfect. And chances are your answer to that question, is this the world you want? There's probably something in your life or somewhere you see in someone else's life that would cause you to answer, no, this isn't exactly the world I want. With a world like this, it's easy to sit here and question, how did we get here and how could we ever make a difference? How could little old me here from Pennsylvania ever make an impact in a world that honestly at times, sometimes feels like it's intent on destroying itself? How could I ever make a difference? How? Well, as I've grown in life, especially in the last couple years, I have become more and more convinced that the answer to that question is far simpler than we make it out to be. That the answer to that question I am completely convinced of is the fact that the how is living like Christ, is replicating Jesus Christ. I'm convinced of this because put it in your head, think about it. Jesus was here for a small amount of time, and in the time that he was here, he trained 12 men, and those 12 men changed the face of the earth forever. The world would never be the same. An empire was changed, a culture was changed, and our world was changed. Us sitting here this morning is proof of that. The work of Jesus Christ changed the world. And so I'm convinced that the answer to the how is to live as Christ lived. You know, the series is called Live Loud. And the whole idea behind it, the whole idea of live loud, John talked a little bit about it last week. But the concept that it means is this idea of that we live like Christ so dynamically that our life speaks volumes to those around us. That our life speaks, the way that we live, speaks to people who see us. Speaks to people to say that there is a different way to live and there is a better way to live. This is what live loud means. It's essentially live as Christ. And that's what brings us here this morning. I want to talk about another aspect of living loud. And for this morning, we're going to term it lifting loud or lift louder. Now, I'm going to explain what I mean by lift here in a little bit. But before I do, I want to jump into something John talked about last week, which I think is really the core and the goal behind this whole series. John talked last week out of Luke 10, verse 27, near the end of his message. And this morning, we're going to be looking at kind of the rest of the context of that passage. So looking at Luke chapter 10, verses 25 to 28, it reads this. On one occasion, the expert in the law stood up to test Jesus. Teacher, he asked, what must I do to inherit eternal life? What is written in the law? He replied, how do you read it? He answered, love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind and love your neighbor as yourself. You've answered correctly, Jesus replied. Do this and you will live. Now, at face value, it seems like this guy in the expert in the law is coming to Jesus and basically being, okay, what's the checklist that I can be saved? But if we really look into this passage, first of all, we'll find out a little bit later that his intentions aren't really great. He has some secret intentions behind asking this. Really, he wants to mess up Jesus in asking this question, which most people want to. And then, you know, Jesus' mic drops and it's all done. But this is kind of what's happening in this situation. But really what this question meant when people would talk about this is he was really trying to find out, okay, how does someone who is in the kingdom of God live? What is the most important thing they should do? What's the goal that they should live out? They're trying to figure out, okay, what's the most important law? Jesus gets asked this question a bunch of different times. And so Jesus takes him back to the law and to God's commandments, and it comes to verse 27. Now, what does that have to do with us this morning? Well, here's the deal. I think what we see in this conversation is we see what our main goal should be in life. And for us to live loud, it's important for us to understand our goals. See, to live loud, we need to line up our goals with God's. To live loud, we need to line up our goals with God's. This should make sense, right? Because if we want to get somewhere, we need to understand where we're going. We need to understand what our goal is. In sports, if you want to throw or kick somewhere, you should probably be looking at where you're throwing or kicking. You know, I remember this advice when I was a kid. I used to go out into the yard and throw baseball with my dad before he gave up on me taking to sports. So we would throw baseball. And I was the type of kid, right, where I could throw really fast, but I had zero aim. Like none. Okay. So I was a kid who was like, yeah, here I go. Ooh. 4 yards over. Okay. That's cool. And my dad would do this thing, you know, most dads do. They run over, they try to pick up the ball. They don't want to look frustrated because they don't want to, you know, make their kid feel bad. So like, good throw, Josh. But in his head, he's thinking, man, I got the wrong son. Okay. And so he picks up this ball. Okay. And he throw back to me and we throw around. And the advice my dad always gave me, I remember this, it's stuck in my head, is if you want to throw the ball to me, you need to look at me. Okay, because I was a kid that was like, okay, here I go, butterfly, and that's why I missed. Okay, so eventually I started doing that, and I'm not great at sports, so let's be honest. The ball didn't make it at him, essentially, but it got closer, okay? It got a lot closer, okay? Maybe landed not 4 yards over. See, the thing is if we want to go somewhere, if we want to hit a target, we need to be looking at that target and understand what that target is. We're never going to reach the right goal if we don't line up with the person who did it perfectly. The truth is, the person who lived like Christ perfectly, Christ. So we need to line up our goals with him. So what were his goals? Well, we see this right here. The first part of lining up our goals with God means we need to make living out God's mission our goal each day. We need to make living his mission our goal each day. We see this in the concept. It says, love the Lord with your mind, soul, heart. It lists out all these things. This is so much more than just a, you know, God is great, I love him. It's like I worship God and he is number one and I serve him with everything I have. Every part of my being is given over to God. Every moment of my day is given over to God. I serve and love him with everything I have. So what this means is we wake up in the morning, no matter what we have going on, the question on our head should be, how do I serve God today? How do I copy Jesus today? How do I copy Jesus when I talk to my kids? How do I copy Jesus when I talk to my significant other? How do I copy Jesus at work, at the grocery store, or even on the road when that guy cut me off and flipped me off? How do I copy Jesus today? It means that nothing is in the position of God but God. Because anything, no matter what it is, even if it's a good goal in life, if we put it before God, we have a problem. God's the only person who can sit in that first position in our life. As John talked about last week with priorities, God should be the number one priority in our life. Nothing else. And then other things get taken care of because God calls us to love our family. He calls us to take care of our family. He calls us to work hard. All that stuff is within God's mission and God's call for us. But God wants us to do it, not just out of a love to be successful or have a great family. He wants us to do it because we love him. And we know that the path he has for us is better. So we put God above everything else in our life. Now, something else that comes with this, as we see, it says, and your neighbor as yourself. Here's the thing. Loving others is a big part of God's mission. We've talked about it here before at LifePoint. God is concerned with relationships more than anything. God cares how you treat other people. Your interactions with anybody, whether your family, your friends, the random person on the street, God says, love them. because I love them. So that should be our goal in our interactions. Each time we talk to someone, that person should feel that they have been loved because God calls us to love them. This is also important. The reason we review a little bit of this is quite frankly because what you put as number one or your goal will drive how you live your life. People can see what is important to you by the way you live your life. I joke with our students in the youth group, you could easily understand my goals in high school, and I can tell you right now, they were not do well in school, and they were not my family. Okay, it was hang out with my friends and have fun. And people could know that because they saw me not prioritize homework, not prioritize school. They saw me blow off my family for friends. They saw that that was the most important thing in my life. That's because what is most important to us, our goals, will drive how we live. It will drive the decisions that we make. And so if we want to live loud and we want to live like Christ, we need to set our goals on the same goals Christ set them on. The same things that were important to Christ need to be important to us. That is how we start the step of living like him. Now, what does this practically look like? How do we do this? Okay, great. God's my number one goal. What's the mission? Okay, what do I do? Okay, God's mission. Great. I'm going to walk out the door. It's going to be perfect. Everything's going to make sense. And then we're all like, okay, I'm not really sure what to do. And so how do we live this out? Well, luckily, as the story progresses, right, this guy asks a question. And it gives us an insight into his reasonings for asking the question, but really asks the same question we do. He then goes into this question of, okay, who is my neighbor? Essentially, who do I have to love? As we'll see a little bit later, the guy was kind of trying to get out of loving certain people and other people. Not the best motivations. But the truth is we all ask that same question. Okay, God, what should I do? And luckily, Jesus answers this question, but he answers it in an interesting way. He tells a story, a parable that we're very accustomed to. And this is a story Jesus tells. So this should be a pretty familiar parable to a lot of you guys. This is the parable of the Good Samaritan. Okay, it's a very popular parable, probably one of the most well-known ones that Jesus tells. And the reason when we hear the term Samaritan, we think of somebody who helps really is because of this parable, is because of what Jesus taught here. And here's the thing, this parable Jesus taught because it's the practical action of the love that he's talking about. He shows us a truth that shines through that really has to do with living loud. See, to live loud, we need to be lifters. Now, what do I mean by this? Well, first of all, I can tell you what I don't mean. I don't mean like working out and getting buff. Okay, some of you guys are like, sweet, to follow Jesus, I just need to be jacked. Okay, that's not what I'm talking about this morning. Okay, although take care of yourselves. But that is not what I'm talking about. Okay, what I mean by lifter is really someone who uplifts someone else. Essentially, a lifter is someone who comes about and they care for that person. They encourage that person. They put the needs of that person before their own, all in an effort to make that person's life better, expecting nothing in return. This is a lifter. This is what the Samaritan does. This is what he lives out. This is what Jesus teaches. So if we look at the story, I think we could see some things that teach us really what a lifter does. What does this look like practically? What are the steps we can take to be this? The first thing we see is that a lifter goes out of their way to care for others. To be a lifter, we need to go out of our way to care for others. Look at the Samaritan. See how he did his action, right? The thing that makes him so different than the other characters in the story is the priest and the Levite, what do? They walk by this guy sitting on the road. I saw some of you out there like shaking your heads at these two guys, like those horrible people. And the Samaritan walks by, and what does he do? He goes out of his way to help the person. He picks him up, and as we see, he starts to do things to take care of that person. He goes out of his way wherever he was going to help that person. See, the truth is we read a story like this and we're often quick to judge the priest and the Levite. We're like, man, horrible people, not me. Okay, that guy's a jerk. Okay. But the truth is that so many of us each day end up more being the priest and the Levite than the Samaritan. We pass by needs. Sometimes it's not as blatant things as someone sitting on the side of the road. Sometimes it's that coworker who's just dealing with a tough time. And instead of talking to him, we keep going to what we're doing. Sometimes it's simply that neighbor who just needs a hand, who's struggling at dealing with some of his work at home. See, sometimes it's not as blatant as a person sitting on the side of the road. The truth is we don't do this because we're horrible people and we're like, man, I hate people. I joked in the first service, maybe there's like one of you out there or two of you that like, no, Josh, that's the reason, man. I can't stand people. But most of us, a lot of it has to do with busyness. A lot of it has to do with the things we're doing in life. I got to be honest, I know some of you guys, and I don't understand how you get everything that you have to get done. Some of the parents of the youth kids, you amaze me some days, okay? Just a lot of things to do. It's true, a lot of us are busy. But the thing is, we let our busyness become a reason to ignore needs around us. And Christ is saying, I understand you're busy, but there are people who need help. See, it's not always some grand gesture where we quit our job for an entire week and we help someone. Sometimes it's simply a conversation. Sometimes it's simply lending that lawnmower to that neighbor, even though you're never getting it back, okay? Sometimes it's small stuff like that. It's trying to make their life better. You know, a good example of this would be a couple weeks ago, I saw a post on Facebook from a girl that I graduated with. She was talking about a time she was at Hack and it was torrentially downpouring and she was walking from her car to go to class. I don't know if any of you guys have been there. I went to Hack for a year and I remember the main campus. Usually the process in the morning was, you know, 18 years of finding parking. Okay, you park, then you get out of the car, you walk over to class. Okay, and if it starts pouring when you park, that sucks. Okay. It's the worst. And so you're walking back. Okay. And you're trying to get to where you're going. Okay. And she shares the story about how she didn't bring an umbrella, you know, the whole spiel, you're walking, you would kill for an umbrella right now. And as she's walking, this guy walks by her and she does this normal thing, right? The guy's walking by with an umbrella and she's like, man, I wish I had that. And literally 2 seconds later, this guy taps her on the shoulder. You know, she said nothing to him. This guy just walks up to her. He goes, hey, I notice you're going to class. You know, you're getting soaked. Would you like my umbrella? So he offered the umbrella to her. Now, she did what most of us would probably do. We're like, no, that's too much. I can't take your umbrella, you know, trying to be the better person and let them keep their umbrella. Well, the guy's like, no, you know what? If you're not going to take it, can I at least walk you to wherever you're going? And so he did. He walked her to the room. He took her to the building, helped her out, kept her dry, and then walked back. The thing, if you notice about the story, he was coming from the opposite direction. He literally turned around and walked the way he had just come to help this person and then walked back to his car. And the powerful thing about this story is that when she shares it, you could see she was not having a good week. And she shares how this really just helped her. That somebody took a moment of their time to help her get to her building in the rain. Guys, sometimes it's as simple as an umbrella in the rain. Sometimes it's as simple as helping in that way. I mean, how many of us, be honest, okay, pass by somebody without an umbrella and the first thought in your head is, sucks to not have an umbrella. Okay, like, come on. How many of us have thought that? But the truth is Christ is saying, even the smallest actions, the things that you can do to help people, you should make their life better. That's how you serve them. That's how you love them. So the first thing we need to do is go out of our way, even in all our busyness, to help other people when we see people who need help. The next part of this is definitely it gets harder each step. The next step is be willing to sacrifice our time and resources. Again, come back to the Samaritan. What does he do? He helps this person. He goes out of his way. And then he starts pulling out oil and bandages. He starts bandaging up the person. He eventually pays for things later on in the story. This guy is sacrificing money. This guy is sacrificing supplies. He is sacrificing things for this person. The truth is helping other people sometimes, if we're honest, it's inconvenient. Sometimes it requires us to sacrifice time we committed for something else. Sometimes it requires us to sacrifice something that we were planning on using, but they need it more. It's not always giving a ton of money. Some people do that. I know people who are incredibly generous with their finances, and it's awesome. God has gifted them, and they're able to do that. Some of us are just trying to buy bread and put it on the table. But that shouldn't stop us from helping other people because we always have something we can give, whether it's our time, it's our resources. God has given us things and he doesn't want us to hold tightly onto them. He wants us to be willing to let go when someone else needs it more. We need to be willing to sacrifice our time and resources. You know, when I think of this idea, I can't help but think of my own father. My own father has been an awesome influence in my life. Him and I have had a rocky relationship because, you know, I wasn't a great child at times. But he's a fantastic dad. And my dad is this type of person. I can't count the amount of times that he has come out and helped us with stuff. Times that I've asked and times that I haven't even asked. You know, times when I'm complaining about, you know, some of the smallest of things. And next thing I know, he ends up giving me something to help with that situation. You know, even the smallest thing, I remember about a year ago or so, I'm trying to remember when it is, but I remember my iPad falling during youth and like smashing into a billion pieces. That was a sad night. And so I came home and I remember calling him. I was talking to him about something else and I just happened to mention it. Next thing I know, I show up 2 days later and there's an iPad sitting in my house. He had one he wasn't using and he gave it to me. It's the one that's sitting right here, right now. He doesn't just do that for me. He does it for other people. I've seen him. There was this couple in their church, and the man, he passed away a couple years ago. And before he passed away, he came to my dad and he said, "Listen, my wife has done a lot for me, but there's a lot of other stuff I take care of. Like, I take care of the money, I take care of the car, and I just think she's going to be overwhelmed and not able to handle this." He said, "Would you be able to take care of her?" Now, I know he came to my dad because he knew my dad was this type of person. And he does. I mean, it's become a little joke because sometimes some of the stuff is kind of hilarious that he's helped out with. But he's always there for her. I remember her calling him at like 2 a.m. with something and him coming a couple hours later to help her. He found the time. And let me tell you, my dad is a busy person. But I've seen him time and time again make space to help other people. See, this is how Christ wants us to live our life. He wants us to be willing to sacrifice when we need to help other people. He wants interactions with us to make other people's lives better. That's how we show love. That's how we lift other people up. That when they've come in contact with us, we've made their life better. Not expecting anything in return, not expecting people to love us, not expecting any of that stuff, just simply to make their life better because Christ has called us to do so. The next part of this, again, gets even a little tougher. Because the next part of lifting up other people involves going above and beyond what is expected of us. Go above and beyond what is expected of us. And this is where the story of the Samaritan really shines, okay? He helps out some of us when he's helping, right? We're like, okay, yeah, I would do that. I would help that guy out, right? But then he picks him up, throws him on the donkey, takes him to an inn, pays for the inn, tells the innkeeper, "Listen, take care of anything he needs. I'm going to come back and I'll cover any of the costs. I'm going to come back and check in on him." See, the Samaritan went above and beyond. He didn't just help him or take care of him. He took care of anything he could, and he came back and invested in that person. He checked in on them. He wanted to help them. A great example of this today is actually Sam and I were watching Ellen. Sam watches it more, I promise. Anyway, but there's a great episode where she's interviewing these two guys, and one's name's Officer Shipman, and the other one's named James. And basically the story goes, a couple of years ago, Officer Shipman was coming off duty. He was about 2 a.m., he's driving down this road, and he notices this kid walking on the side of the road. Now, it's 2 a.m., it's 19 degrees out. Kid's got a hood up, so he's pulling sort of a dual thing where he's like, "I want to help the kid, but also, what the heck is that kid doing?" Okay, so pulls over, talks to him for a little bit, finds out that the kid was working full-time at McDonald's and he was walking back from his job. And so he's like, "Hey, I'll drive you home." So he picks up James, he puts him in the car, he drives James back home. While they're in the car, he finds out the reason he doesn't have a car is because James has been working full-time. He's in school full-time too, so he's trying to swing that. And he's also, most of his money is either going to paying for school, going to where he lives, and he also has a single mom back home that's been very struggling because they have a lot of siblings. And so he sends money back to her. Now he tells them this whole story. Now Officer Shipman does something that's very cool. He's like, "Hey, can we exchange information? I'd like to keep up with you." And so he does that. So he exchanges information with James. Well, he finds out more of the story, finds out that James' story, this is really what's happening. And so he goes out and he decides to raise money through the community. And he raises enough money to buy James a car and to help pay for some of his school. Now, a couple years pass and we see them on Ellen. And that's not even the most impressive part of the story. We find out that Officer Shipman has been keeping up with James. He's been a part of James's life for the last couple of years. And you find out that these guys are friends now. Officer Shipman's kind of taken a fatherly role in James's life. giving him advice, helping out with things when he needs stuff helped out with, and just building a relationship with him. And you can see the impact that this makes in James's life. It changed this kid's life. See, this is what it means to go above and beyond. It means not just to show up and help. It means to invest in people's lives. It means to get to know them, to be a part of their life, to love them unconditionally, to do anything we can to help and serve them. This is the kind of selfless action Christ is calling us to. It's not easy. It's inconvenient. But the payout is huge. It changes lives. It takes someone who's dealing with just horrible stuff right now, and it gives them a little hope. Even the small encouragement card can give that family who just lost someone a big light of hope. Even that small conversation you have with that coworker who has been struggling in their marriage can have a little piece of hope. It's when we go out of our way to put others before ourselves and serve them that we can change their lives. It is an awesome thing to be a part of. Now, there's one other component to this, to being an effective lifter, to really changing lives. And it is this: it's guarding against justification for not lifting. We need to guard against justification for not lifting. Go back to the story, right? So we have our guy, our friendly lawyer man, okay, in the story. Ask this question. If we go back to verse 29, we see his real motives. It says this: but he wanted to justify himself, so he asked Jesus, "And who is my neighbor?" I love this. You know, the narrator kind of pops in a little bit to be like, this guy was kind of not great, okay? Wanting to justify himself, he asked, "Who is my neighbor?" Okay, here's the thing. This guy really, he wasn't trying to find out how to serve God. He was trying to find out, what's the minimum I have to do? What's the minimum God wants me to do? And we don't know his motivations. Maybe it wasn't horrible motivations. Maybe he really did just have a lot going on and he wanted to know. But really his question was, who do I need to love? And the interesting thing about the way Christ answers this question is he reverses it. He doesn't say, hey, love this, 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 and this. He says, he reverses it to say, it's not about who is your neighbor, it's about how good of a neighbor you are. And even in the person he uses, we read this story and we just think, okay, Samaritan, great person. But there's a lot of history between the Samaritans and the Jewish people. It goes way back to Old Testament times when the Samaritans got separated from the rest of the Jewish people. They ended up intermarrying with other people. The Jewish people came to call them as half-breeds. They wanted to help rebuild a temple. The Jewish people denied them. They built their own temple. There was a war. They destroyed the temple. This is the type of history that these type of people have. They hate each other so much that in John 8, Jesus' opponents can't think of anything worse to say than, are you a Samaritan and a demon-possessed person? Yeah, like those two things were equal in their mind, like demon-possessed and Samaritan. They're horrible, okay? These people hated each other. And I love Jesus because he uses a Samaritan as the protagonist. He's essentially saying to this guy, listen, it's not about who you love. It's not about who is your neighbor. Everyone's your neighbor. It doesn't matter who they are, race, background, situation, demeanor, whether they love you or they're the guy who just cursed you out 5 seconds ago. Those people are your neighbors. Christ is saying, I'm calling you to do this with every person you come in contact with. So I'm calling you to love every single person, to show them that at every moment, even the person who is tough. Jesus is saying, I'm calling you to love them. We see this in Luke 10, 36 to 37. Jesus asks, which of these three do you think was a robber? And the man who fell into his hands, the expert in the law replied, the one who had mercy on him. Jesus told him, go and do likewise. Just a fun note in here. I also love how the guy can't even say Samaritan in the answer. All the translations say the same thing. The guy who showed mercy on him. Again, guy's not really getting it. But Jesus is calling him to live out this. He's saying, live this. And the reason for that is because when each of us do this, people's lives are changed. But when a whole community commits to live this way, that's when you can shift the movement of culture. That's when you can shift an entire community. That's when you can change an entire situation. Even the toughest situations filled with hate and anger, when an entire community chooses to lift, lives can be changed. Bigger things can happen. Big change happens. Some of you know I like to come up with weird names for things, and I call this the ant principle. Now, what I mean by that is not the wonderful lady who brings candy to you, okay? I mean the bug. And what I mean by this is if you've ever had a problem with ants, Sam and I had one recently where I, you know, some of you are going to laugh at me, but I didn't know ants eat cat food, okay? That was not a thing that I knew, okay? So, we had cat food sitting out, and I wake up one morning and Sam's like, hey, we have a little bit of an ant issue. And I was like, okay, sure, that's cool. Go crush a couple ants. And I walk in and the whole room is covered. Like the floor is like their entire armada came to our house and decided to siege us, okay? This is the kind of ant issue we were dealing with. So Sam and I eventually did what I called nuking them, and she went out and bought all these traps that they get sick and then they take it back to their home. My wife is merciless, okay, and decided to kill them all. Okay, so we got rid of the ant issue. But the point of that here is whenever ants come in, the reason there's so many of them is because they need to work together to carry the things that they're taking. Okay, they're not going to be able to steal all of my cat food with one ant. That's going to take forever. So they bring a whole armada of little annoying bugs and they come into our house and they drag the cat food out of our house. And then our cat's sad and everyone's sad. They work together to do this. And that's why I call this the ant principle. Because if we would work together to lift the stuff I talked about in the beginning of this message, it would be a minor issue. If each of us chose to live this out each day, we could bring massive change. This is how the movement of the church took off. If we would live, each of us, doing this each day, we could start to change and we could start to make the world into something better. But it requires each one of us to take this step, to become a lifter and do it together, to lift each other, to lift the people out there, to lift the people at work, to lift the random guy we come into conversation with in the plane, to lift the person who cut us off. It requires us to do this for every person we come in contact with. And it's that we can change an entire culture if we live this out. So again, that brings us back to the question from the beginning. Is this the world you want? If your answer is no, don't lose hope and don't for a second believe the lie that you can't do anything. Each of us has the opportunity to do something. If we leave this building today and each of us chooses to live as a lifter, we can change the situation. We can change the division. We can change the pain. We can change the hurting. And the beautiful thing is everyone will see Jesus Christ even better. So let's leave and lift. Let's pray.